Jesus. Sorry. I have a real bad problem here. Hang on. Just don't. Wait till I've got 600. That's good with me. We're done.
It almost works.
Yeah, well, it doesn't. So let's. Yeah, no, I had a different idea about this. Before I can turn on mirroring. Try. Yep. Okay. It'll work. Let's.
Okay. So are we ready now? I think we are here. So welcome to the IP anti-spoofing task force session. How do I operate this? No, damn, shit. Yeah. So first we have the agenda. So what we're going to do is we're going to have the opening, and then we have report from chairs, and that would be Daniel who would do that. And after that, we'll discuss the documents that has so far been worked on in the group. And then we will decide on a work plan, and then we have some informal items in the end. So first, yeah, we have a scribe from the Rybantinsee, Susanna, thank you. And then do we have any comments for the agenda? Anybody need anything else to be discussed? Doesn't seem to be the case. And do we have every presenter and authors in the room? Good. And otherwise, we are all here. Thank you. And then Daniel will go on.
Okay, hello. This will be short. The status of the task force, I just went and cut and pasted from our work plan. The work plan for the last meeting and to do between the last meeting and now is here. So we had a BOF and we established a task force. That was easy. Next one was to quickly draft and publish a right recommendation about anti-spoofing, you know, source address filtering. We sort of there because we have a draft. We didn't have it quickly, and we don't have it published yet. But there's progress. Compile a how-to with pointers to vendor documentation and operational experience reports. I think I put a check mark there because we have a very long document and with a lot of detail that was actually published almost a month ago now. And there wasn't all that much discussion about it. So I think we have compiled it, and I thank the two people who did it and who will present it shortly. We have established a liaison with the spoofer project, the people at MIT who are measuring spoofable networks as well as it's possible. We have actually signed NDAs and all sorts of. We actually ended up signing a contract with them as the RIPNCC. It was mind-boggling, and we have started analyzing the data. But we since this is all in an SQL database and the semantics of the schema, we thought we understood it until we really tried to use that data. So we haven't really gotten a good analysis there yet. What I can take from the spoofer project, obviously from their website, is the map of spoofable networks. What they do is they just basically collect the network addresses of tests that actually showed that there was free spoofing. I mean, you know, all the red dots are in places where the CADA folks think a IP address is located that can actually arbitrarily use any IP address as a source address. So this is not just limited spoofing inside some small blocks, but every of the red dots represents a measurement of a network of a host that could actually arbitrarily choose and pick its source address. And some of them are in our region, unfortunately. So the plan, what was in our document as a plan for RIPE 53 was to have published a RIPE recommendation on ingress filtering. Well, we haven't quite. We have a draft. Oh, sorry. There's a red cross here. And have published the first edition of the how-to. Well, we have a draft. It's not such a big red cross. We haven't actually collected any critical requirements that are not currently met by equipment vendors. So this is, I would characterize as an ongoing activity, so there's no check mark. Oops, I already talked about the first analysis of the spoofer data. We did some analysis, but we couldn't make sense of it, so we're not publishing it. Discussion of possible incentive schemes is something that I had hoped would happen on the mailing list, but didn't have time to actually instigate. So we can have that either here at the bar or on the mailing list. Obviously, we can't revise and extend the how-to because we're still in the first draft stage. And then, devise incentive schemes. That was what in there. So I think, in conclusion, I can say we haven't moved fast enough to meet our really, really aggressive and optimistic timelines, but we have made progress. And that ends the report from the chairs. Any remarks so far? No? Okay. Then going back to the agenda, we are now on point C, discussion of documents, and Nina can go away, go ahead and ask the
Yeah, so we're going to start with a kind of business case thing, and y'all will be doing that, so please.
No, it's okay. I won't be using any slides. It's more about talking. So I don't think in the previous iteration of this, there was a document called business case. There was just a right recommendation, if I remember correctly. What happened is that I volunteered to write the recommendation. It took me a while, but then I came up with a document that was like 5 or 6 pages long. I sent it to Daniel. Daniel was on holidays. Then he commented, basically saying, which I think is right, that it was too long for a recommendation. But then I went on holidays myself. So this is the kind of thing that happens during the summer, you know. But anyway, in the end, we both came back and decided to split the document into two. What we realized is that, okay, yes, a recommendation needs to be something that takes about a page and is to the point, that is clear what is being recommended and not have a lot of arguments. But also that the fact is, in many cases, what happens is that techies might want to do this, but they would have to get management approval to spend the resources, whatever they are, that it needs to get this implemented. And this is why I decided to write this business case document. We are writing this together, Daniel and I. There is a draft that was sent to the list, and basically it's listing, it's kind of rough. The language needs to be written, polished. At least, But what we're looking for in this document is basically to produce a document that will be addressed not to the people who actually run the network, but the people who have the capacity to tell the people who run the network that this needs to be done and why. It's an argumentation of, okay, it's doing something always costs you something, but not doing it probably costs you more, and this is why, and these are the real costs and these are the benefits, and basically look at it carefully and think in terms of not whether you can afford to do this, but rather in terms of can you afford not to do it. So basically that's the whole idea, and this is where the comment. Please have a look at the document that was sent. If you have any bright ideas of arguments that you think would add weight to the document, I would like to hear about them, and we would add them. That will be it.
The basic question is: look at that draft. It's only 2 pages long. If you haven't already, it's in the archives. It was sent to the mailing list a week ago, and ask yourself, will that convince my management? If you're a techie, ask yourself, will that convince my management? If you're sort of higher up in the food chain, ask yourself, will that convince me? And try to either give us more arguments or argue with us whether what we're saying is valid, just to make this a better document. Yep. Questions, remarks so far? Well, that was easy.
Yeah.
The next on the agenda is the recommendation itself. And that's also has been circulated to the mailing list. I sent it last Tuesday, so there's more than a week that there was a chance to actually comment. I have had zero comments so far. And I just put the meat of it. There's a preamble, a postamble, and a boilerplate and everything. But the meat of it is actually in 5 bullet points. So you see the first 3 here. Wright recommends that ISPs should verify source addresses as close to the network edge as possible. Any comments? Wow. Wright recommends that ISPs should not carry traffic with spoofed source addresses. I was looking for comments here because that's hard. You know, the more you get into the core.
But it also says, sure. It's hard, that's a good enough reason.
Okay, maybe I should do the IETF boilerplate, which should means. Okay. Okay.
should is not mandatory.
Yeah, should is not mandatory. That's
yeah,
true.
Which is realistic, unfortunately.
Yeah.
You need a good reason to violate should. And in this case, it's obvious that it's very hard to find out.
Yeah, okay. Use a microphone. Let's have a bit of discussion. Otherwise, this becomes boring.
Okay, yes, I agree. The second bullet point is problematic because it's very hard to implement in the general case for an ISP. Because it says ISP, general, it implies some sort of best effort for an ISP to find out whether a source address is spoofed. And in some cases, that is just very hard. So if you look at the way that the IETF specifies the capitalized should, it sort of says you have to have a very good reason not to do it. No. But in this case, the recommendation doesn't really make much sense in this wide scope.
So my question back to you would then be, okay, I see why the second bullet should have a should. How about making the first bullet a bit stronger and say must?
Well.
Okay, the queue up. I think Fergal was next.
Change it from should not to must not, which I think is defined to mean the same thing, and see what happens.
Okay. Neil?
Of course, when you have two colleagues from the same institution, I'm Neil O'Reilly from UCD, and that was my colleague Fergal. We have, of course, two totally different ways of reading the same piece of text. But my inclination in reading that goes back to a legal concept of the consistency of the document as a whole. And I'm reading the second bullet point in the context of the first. Mm. And the verification should therefore be towards the edge. Because after all, you can't verify what's coming to you from the core, more or less, except that you can know that if you're getting in a source address that belongs to you from the side that you know isn't you, you can maybe do something there. So I don't see the second one as quite so problematic, because it's placed in the consequence of the first one. And maybe that needs to be spelled out a bit more, but
okay,
that's how I'd resolve the difficulty.
Okay. Okay, what I hear you saying is two things. One is the language in the first one should be clarified that it means from the received addresses from outside the edge, from outside. So yeah, I'm open to suggestions as to concise language to use here. The other thing is that you say that the second follows from the first, and that's not quite true, because
No, that's not what I said. I said the second is placed in the context of the first.
Okay, I see.
And for the second, the argument for the core, I think we have two kind of spoofed source addresses. One, the ones they're obviously wrong, starting with 0.something, and you can block them also from the core. And the other ones, legitimate IP addresses, which you might or might not know that they are wrong.
Yeah, that's true. Okay, can we move to the third bullet point? Okay, it says ISPs should publish their policies regarding source address verification. So what I want here is basically ISPs say, we do this. And in a bit more detailed way of saying, you know, from our broadband customers, you know, we verify the source address because that's just what our radio stuff gives us, yeah. And from here we do that, and from here we do that, general policy, and where appropriate, you know, where they feel comfortable with it, or where it actually is important information, publish how these are implemented. Now we get movement.
Well, this seems at least problematic in cases where this would mean that you have to publish your leaks. If you have to have something where you are not perfect yet.
What's the information if you don't publish anything?
Publishing the intended policy is actually giving information, because doing that, you at least indicate to your peers that you are actually concerned and doing something.
Mm. Yeah, if we go back to basic logic, if you don't give information, it's neither yes or no.
If parties that don't care actually indicate that, I am not really that much concerned, because what they will get, they deserve.
Right.
Okay, but are you happy with a language that says should publish their policies, which is their intentions? I would interpret to be as their intentions, and where appropriate, publish implementation or details. Is that acceptable, or is that going too far?
Andrei Rubashev, KRIPC. Clarifying question. Are you suggesting to publish, or the place for publishing those policies? Is it something like routing registry, or is it too much detail?
I haven't even thought
point?
About that. I would think that when I wrote this, or actually João and I wrote this sort of interactively, my connotation here is publish it in some form. I didn't even think about a vehicle. I would actually at this point, not having thought about it very much, be happy with something on the Access for All website that says, you know, we do this. But yeah, maybe it's a good idea to think
just
of
a common place for publishing publishers. Right.
Yeah, but I don't want to be sort of get myself be suspected of looking for more work for the NCC. Neil
O'Reilly again. I'm thinking maybe this is a no-brainer that doesn't need to be said and everybody understands it, but I take it that under point three we're talking of not very fine granularity, and we're not looking at something like publishing the routing policies, but we're looking at a two-liner statement that we do the following kind of things, and we don't publish the detail, of course.
Maybe it should say their general policies or something to make that clear. Yeah, definitely, the intention of that language is not to say that you have to publish that you punch these holes for this particular customer because they have the special application that. You know.
Yes. Question. Jean-Jacques. My question is how. Is the last part of the sentence intended to be understood? So are you trying to publish, for example, let's say, router configuration examples as a best practice, let's say, or is it at a general policy level? So you say that you verify this or that.
It's more general. I think specific best practice things is something that goes into the how-to document and it's not part of the policy. I mean, obviously, the more ISPs that actually help with the how-to document, the better, but that's not part of this policy. But what the intention here is to say, we're happy with the two-line statement that says, you know, from our broadband customers, we do this and that. But if there's something interesting, an interesting way in that's being done, or something that distinguishes one ISP from the other, it's quite okay to say something technical. That's sort of where this goes, or where this is intended to go. Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Todd Underwood, Renesas. So going back to the first point, included in the network edge is presumably the peering edge of a large network. Because that's its edge, mm-hmm. right? Or do we, because it yeah. which seems implausible to me, given that people don't even prefix filter their peers.
Yeah. That's open. Actually, if you look into the business case document, it actually argues that at the peering edge, it actually makes sense to do some filtering of your own prefixes to basically say, don't accept your own prefixes. Address a source by.
Absolutely, that's a very weak statement in comparison to verifying source addresses in general. I guess what I'm saying is it seems implausible to me that large networks will do anything to verify the bulk of source addresses that they receive from large peers. Yeah. And since that is a network edge, it might be worth distinguishing downstream network edge, customer network edge, something like
that may be worth it because that's the intent here.
And
as I said before, suggestions for concise language are welcome.
Customer network edge, downstream network edge.
Yeah. Yep, something like that. Okay, last two. ISPs should exchange information about implementation of source address verification freely with other ISPs. The reason there was that we think there's lots of FUD here, and if it's possible to basically between ISPs to say, hey, we did it this way and it worked, like in the good old days. Maybe this is naive. Any comments? Three is publish, and four is exchange with peers, which is a different.
Yeah. But three is strong. Yes.
Yeah, yes, three is stronger because it says publish, but this says, you know, it's a, if you have a friendly peer, yeah, you talk with, I mean, just please talk with them, and you might tell them things that you don't publish, right? That's the intent here. It's more, the intention here is to help sort of people who want to justify to their management chain that it's okay. You know, we don't trade our business secrets on how you run our whatever and how what the color of our patch cables is, but in this area, you know, Ripe recommends that we actually talk to each other. For what it's worth. Okay, people nodding, so that's good. And then there's the transitive one, you know, the big movement. It's like, yes, ESPs should encourage both their customers and their peers to follow this recommendation, which is motherhood and apple pie, I guess. Okay, someone's taking the bait.
Christian Panik, University of Vienna. How about asking customers to encourage their ISPs? For instance, in public procurement processes or whatever.
Yeah. Well, yes, but this is the club of ISPs.
But Ripe is not only.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Yeah. No. Yeah. How to say this politely? Okay. We'll see. good suggestion. Okay. I think I'm done. So we can go to the how-to. You need a
yes.
Yeah, okay.
Can't see it.
That's 800 by 600, unfortunately.
200 by 600.
Yeah.
Okay. Yes. Okay. Let's see. This here. Okay. This is for those who haven't read the document we post to the mailing list. This is a brief resume of what it includes and what we need to from you. Okay. Actually, we have considered a typical network from an ISP, which can be connected to three carriers, three peers, three telcos, and well, those to internet, but we can consider then internet. We have considered the four cases that you see there, A, B, C, D. A is that small ISPs that have only one connection to the ISP, to one ISP. And we usually recommend, in the document, actually we recommend a strict URPF or ANT or static filters. Second, several links to one ISP carrier. This is not very common, but sometimes you find it. And here, well, we can consider straight or loose URPF and or static filters. C is probably the most common, the ISP connected to two or more carriers. And then, of course, you have loose URPF and or static filters. And finally, the customers, small customers, that are connected with one link, and here the same static filters, and probably a static filter is the users, and a strict URPF. In case of customers bigger, then is the case of one carrier, but just the opposite. So The document actually includes code for Cisco routers with a lot of examples and almost template that you can copy and paste, but I think this needs some revision, enhancements, and recommendations. From Juniper, we have some code. Juan Pedro has included some code in his part. Actually, my site is lacking it. I plan to introduce it, to include it, sorry. And from other equipment, we need everything. We have expertise in Cisco. We have some expertise in Juniper, but we don't have any expertise on other equipment. So we encourage fabricantes, manufacturers, and other ISPs who work with other equipment to contribute that code. Of course, all these ideas are open to discussion, and we have some considerations. Basically, the static filter we have built are based on a static bogon list like RFC 18, no, excuse me, 1918, etc. We would like to include a method for including this bogon list, the YANA range, but we don't have it. Some feedback will be welcome. And we don't know if it's better or not than URPF in overloaded routers. In any case, we think that the static filters can filter some address that a URPF filter wouldn't discover by itself. For those who haven't read the draft, the actual are slightly modified with some aesthetic changes. Of the draft is posted here. And okay, the next one says comments, help, ideas, but I will leave this for if someone wants to take note.
Yeah, first of all, I think I'd like to thank you both for doing this work. It's a lot of people talk about it, but only few people do it. So I think that's very useful. The other thing that I would like to see in the how-to is not so much just the recipe, the way you go now with the recipes for different kinds of equipment. But also, what I would like to see is some ISPs who have actually deployed some of this stuff to write a half a page or a page about their experiences. You know, we did this, this worked. We did that, that didn't. This kind of thing. That's something that we really, really desperately need for a document like the how-to. And we also need it on a little bit of a higher level for the business case document, where we want to make the point that it is possible and it's not going to make your network or running your network twice as expensive. So please, anyone who actually has experience with deploying this stuff, even if it's only partially or whatever, you know, please come forward. I'm quite happy. Personally, actually, if people have a problem with or have no time to write something down or have a problem with writing sort of English and things like that, I'm quite happy to talk to you and write up what I hear, and you get to read the drafts and correct them before we include this work. We need these kind of experience reports also. And we need more from other vendors, like, for instance, DSL. How do you do this in DSL, in a DSL customer environment and things like that? Or how do you do this, even more importantly, in a cable customer environment? Because my experience is that in the DSL, that usually is standard. In the cable, at least my cable at my house had some limited ability to spoof. So that was that.
Work plan.
Work plan.
now Daniel will talk about the work plan. Hey.
Well, we all talk about the work plan. We all talk about the work plan. That's fine. It should remember what it. So, this was the original work plan for RAP 54, which is the next meeting, Tallinn. What we wanted to have is published. This was the plan from the last meeting, right? Published second edition of IP source address filtering how-to. Well, okay. Further analysis of spoofer data. Launch any incentive scheme. Implement incentive scheme. Monitor progress. Well, given where we are, my proposal for a revised plan would be publish the first edition of the how-to, publish some analysis of the spoofer data, and that's what we'll do at the RIPE NCC. We want to get the RIPE recommendation adopted, definitely at the meeting. So what I propose we do is João and I will go and fold in the comments that we got at this meeting after we read the minutes and recollect what we remember, and then post it to the list. And I would really want to have some discussion on the list, even if the discussion is only I agree with this recommendation. I mean, some a little bit of a positive feedback, because then we can go and give this to Rob and say, please do whatever you need to do in the right machinations to get this paper adopted. And we want to publish the business case document. And again, if there are some experience reports forthcoming, that would be really nice. It's also, I hope I can, over the next couple of months, I can make some time to actually visit some ISPs, some people who have experience and try to write down what maybe some text that could go in there, we had this brainwave about having a publicity stunt at Tallinn, which is RIPE 54, to get some ISPs, not too small ones, maybe a dozen lined up there, that basically say, hey, we will sign a declaration that says we want, you know, we are implementing, we have implemented, or we will be implementing these recommendations, and we think a thing. So the challenges for all of you, are there other incentive schemes rather than, you know, just a declaration? How to get content for the how-to? Your vendor information, as we said, about the boxes. But more importantly, provider experience reports. We did this, we did that, this kind of stuff. Some commitments for work. I mean, if there's people who say, well, I'll work on this, that would be nice. And to find signers for the talent declaration thing. So I'll leave this one up, because I think, yeah, conclusion was we're gathering momentum, but slowly. Ask not what we can do for you, .. But these are the challenges. What I'd like to have some feedback about is, how likely is it that we get some provider experience reports? Will people jump up here and say, oh yeah? Also, is it realistic to find ISPs that will step up to the plate and say, yes, this is good, we're going to do it? Or are you all sleeping?
Some months ago, IIJ, Internet Initiative Japan, which is one of the biggest ISPs there for companies, made the public declaration that they were implementing either loose or strict RPF.
It's still working.
Well, it has motion sensors or something, right? And they made quite a point of making people aware that they were doing this, and they made also a report. So we'll probably approach them and ask them a little bit more details about the information. But it would be along those lines that the kind of thing that Daniel is asking. For the Tallinn Declaration, what Daniel intends to do is basically have people ask people to sign this. If you are in this room, you know that you are likely to be asked. So that affects the wording in the recommendation. Like, if you could look at the wording that's in the recommendation and look like this is something I would be able to sign or get someone to sign, that would be, or not, or what would need to be changed in order to have someone at my organization sign it. It would be nice to hear it before we actually show up at your doorstep. And the other thing is about the experiences. If you haven't done this yet, but you know someone else sitting next to you, just point us. We can do the legwork of actually going talk to them.
Yeah, that was one thing. Yeah, go ahead.
I would like to say, as mentioned before, I would like to work on this project, and I will try to convince some of the ISPs I know that they're going to implement some of this stuff, even if it's ready or not. I think the old folks all know that this would be a very good thing in the real world if everybody is verifying customer addresses. The other thing that probably could be done is there any institution currently gathering information? Which network does verification of their addresses? Are there simply tools that everybody could put on their laptops and try to do some spoofing?
Spoofer.
Can we probably publish a link? I have missed it probably. So
yeah, no, it's actually in the task force charter document. The problem is it's not that easy to run. I mean, in the sense you have to have, if you have a Windows machine, you have to have administrator rights, and it sometimes doesn't work because actually Microsoft did the right thing and made this very hard. And if you're on a Linux or Unix machine, you have to be root and things like that. So it's not something for John Doe, but it exists. Simon.
Yes, about the spoofer thing. Everybody should go home and try to run this. I think most people... I think it runs on a Windows with some stuff disabled. I don't know. It runs on a Linux just fine. For most people, they will be prevented from spoofing by their NAT at home. And I really wonder... probably I think that spoofing is becoming less of a problem because people have more and more NATs at home, and they... although I don't like them, otherwise they are pretty good filter against spoof packets, and but it also makes it hard to run the spoofer project, the spoofer program from home, unless you can log into the net. So I think this would be a nice thing to run on these home routers, like were shown in the meeting before in the TTM session, as a addition to Linksys software or something.
That's very nice. Yeah, let's have that in the minutes, that we ask Luca to see whether they can actually do a spoofer implementation. Yeah.
About Simon's comment that spoofing seemed to be becoming less important, there was also, I think it was Barry Green that mentioned that. Well, February of this year, VeriSign was in the receiving end of a DNS reflector attack that basically took it down because it generated more traffic than all of its capacity could handle, right? And it was in a large part coming from spoofed addresses. During the IETF, I got to talk to, because I work for an American company, I ended up in a meeting with some US government officials, and they started generating brilliant ideas, like governments do from time to time, of, well, maybe we need to pass a law. Maybe we need to put this as a requirement in supplier contracts when we have, you know, in the US, the US government is actually a big customer. That doesn't affect us here directly in Europe, but we have our own self good idea generator hosted not far from this.
And also it's not a good idea.
Yeah?
Yeah.
So
Yeah.
You think regulation is more effective? Okay.
But the thing about I'd also like to, chairman's privilege, to comment a bit on the spoofing becoming less important. As Joao says, I mean the reflector attacks actually don't work without spoofing. Yeah. So if there's no spoofing, there's no reflector attacks. Done. Yeah. So that's one point we have to drive home, because not many people know that. The other thing is that what I hear from the security guys, and I just heard it this today over lunch, is that as far as botnets are concerned and these kind of things, servers are becoming more and more popular because of various things, but among other things, their connectivity, power, and the lack of actually good malware fighting on them. So if you and spoofing in data centers is can be really, really bad. So while John Doe consumer may be netted and not a problem, you know, there are other areas that definitely are a problem. Neil.
Well, 2 points. One is a comment on what you were just saying, which in turn was a comment on what Joanne was saying. It may be that spoofing is becoming more less significant, but that's a current trend. We don't know what the trend next month or next week or 6 months down the line is going to be. And it's as well to take all the precautions to mitigate against spoofing before it becomes significant again. That said, the other thing that occurs to me is that I'll happily sign anything, but it won't necessarily carry the institutional weight of the organization that employs me. So I'm wondering if there may be, I'm not sure that I can convince the relevant people to sign it, but I wonder if there can be remote signature possibilities to the Tallinn Declaration.
Oh, if you can sign it beforehand.
Yeah, for example. But you're thinking of a digital or paper signature or what? Or a nice piece of message? Or I mean, what kind of ceremony circus is going to be?
I have no idea. But I think the minimum is a list of those signing published. So some way of making sure that if...
That you don't put somebody on the list who hasn't actually signed.
Yeah, if UCD, yep. If UCD is on the list, that they don't come after me. Or the RIPE NCC or anyone.
You've got less to fear from them than I have.
Yeah. Rodney.
It's possible, I wasn't at the BOF, it's possible people have asked this. Do we actually know between us why people don't do this already?
Oh, let's take that to the bar. But you know the short answer is it's a tragedy of the commons thing. It's like there's a widespread belief that it doesn't give you any business advantage because you're basically solving the other guy's problem. That's the widespread belief or wisdom. The other is that there's lots of rumors is that it's expensive and difficult to do and all that kind of stuff. So that's actually what we try to do with the business case document is saying, hey, it actually gives you a benefit, and B, hopefully, and that's why we still need some feedback from people who actually done it, hey, it's not that expensive either. And we want to make it cheaper by things like the how-to document by basically saying, hey, you know, this is the way you do it. But the main impression I get when I talk to people is that they say, hey, you know, what's the marketing advantage of this, or you know, what is the feature our customers get from doing this? And obviously, the answer is the short answer is none. Yeah, the long answer is too complex, and they've turned away and looking the other. And the other is lots of uncertainty about the costs or rumors that the costs are huge. Are we done with this? And we can come to the last point on the agenda.
Yes, the last point is we have Mark coming to tell us about some interesting related stuff.
Oh, yeah. Well, the slides are only here. Isn't supposed to happen to Max. There we go. Yep. Hi.
So I'll try to make this quick. I know we all want to get to social events and all this kind of stuff. This is, like it says here, this is just a quick heads up and call for input. My name is Mark Townsley. I'm an area director in the IETF for the internet area. And some of this input here was provided by Ron Bonica, who had facilitated bringing this to the IETF from a bunch of other people. So what I'm talking about is that what I'm relaying to you is that there's been some requests for birds of a feather in the IETF for this thing called SAVA, Source Address Verification Validation Architecture, sorry. And there's this thing that the IETF has now, a little BOF wiki that you may or may not know about. It's kind of new, but I'm going to go switch over to it because it's got a bunch of really neat links on it. And just in general, if you want an update on BOFs that are going on in the IETF, you can go to this. And basically it's like, you know, okay, for the San Diego IETF, we have in the different applications, general, internet area, internet has had several, as we usually do, BOF requests, and the status of them as they're being, you know, accepted or denied. But SAVA here, the status is request denied. So this is for the upcoming IETF in November. We denied the request. But as it says in the next steps, we want the guys to work on the problem definition, framework solutions, discuss the IETF's 67 open area meetings. So it's not a full BOF, but maybe 15 minutes in a presentation like I'm doing here. And finally, recruit more people to work on the problem. That's what my few minutes is all about. I'm following up on that. So that's a little bit of the history. There was a bar BOF in Montreal. There was a good bit of discussion about this thing. And then the real BOF request was denied, though the door is still open for future IETF. We didn't tell these guys, this is evil. You guys are just completely wrong. We said, you know, listen now, you're not completely ready for a successful BOF, so it's in your interest to wait till the next time. So there's, you know, lots of frameworks, problem definitions, and all this kind of stuff. But to kind of boil it down to one of the basic ideas of a mechanism that may fall out of this, that's been proposed. I'm going to try to do this in under 2 minutes. Assume there's a contract between two parties, two different ASs. Those ASs agree to do BCP 38 ingress filtering, but packets, when they flow from one AS to the other, are marked. There's all sorts of ways to mark. Maybe there's some sort of cookie, maybe there's a little hash on part of the packet. God knows, there's all different ways to do it. But there's a marking, okay? When it gets to the other AS, you have two things now. You have the source IP address like you normally would, and you also have this little marking to say, you know, did this packet really come from that AS or not? And you can check. And basically, the idea is to have a mechanism to start giving you tools to shift that incentive around. That you were talking about, actually. That's, whoops. No. Sorry.
Sure.
There we go. That's the idea. So that's one of the little mechanisms that are in the whole gamut of things that they're proposing. To see, again, all the things they're proposing, if you look down, I don't have a laser pointer or anything, that, what I just described, is a combination of SPM and SAVE. Two of the proposed. These go to PDF documents, research documents with, you know, lots of nice figures and math and stuff. And there's another one here, DPF. Okay, so feel free, or actually please, read these. There's a couple of individual submission internet drafts right here as well. So again, for more information, you have the BOF wiki, which I was pointing to, a document repository, and this presentation so that you can get all these links off. So if you remember one thing, you can remember this final link, and I'll put it back up in just a second. As for feedback, I only have 5 minutes. There's not room time to talk about this thing, but you can send feedback here. So that would be to my email address or to Yari Arcos, which is my co-area director for the internet area. The SAVA mailing list itself, so there is a public mailing list. The internet area general mailing list, where this was being discussed at some point, or the ISG and IAB, because again, we fully expect another BOF request to be coming in for the next IETF, and that's one of the things we want some feedback of, on whether or not you know this is realistic, and what they're doing is something that is good and useful. So I think that's about 5 minutes. Thanks. Anybody who wants that, have it? Okay.
Okay, and I think that was the last thing that we would have today, so it's time for the bar, I think.
And we did it in exactly 1 hour, 2 minutes less than 1 hour.
Very good. Have a good evening.
Thank you.